listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.
You're on mute. Bruce, you're on mute. Can you hear me, Eddie?
I'm here.
Okay. Bruce, no, can't hear you, Bruce.
I guess he's having problems connecting.
We don't have this very often, this glitch. This is interesting. Golly, that's what he's reconnecting, I guess. I'll tell you, Eddie, I've been really excited to have you on here. This is going to be great.
Thank you so much for having me over.
Well, you've got a story, man, and it's awesome.
There you go.
No. There he is.
Can you hear me?
Hey, Bruce.
Hey, okay. So welcome to the show. And Wayne, we have a special guest today. Go ahead and pick it up if you haven't already.
I started to, Bruce. This is a friend of mine. I met him several years ago. His name is Eddie Vargas. And I'm not going to tell his story because one of the reasons I get excited about him being on this program, we had Easter dinner together.
Oh, fantastic.
This year. And it's because his story. This guy's got to stand where he is now. I'll let him go, but he's a big shot.
Okay.
But he has earned every bit of it, and this guy has had a career. He's a retired major of the United States Army. And this guy, I want to start off, though, Eddie, if you don't, this is Eddie Vargas, but Eddie, if you don't mind, first of all, start when we were talking the other day again. You were born and kind of there and where you came, your dad brought you, and so.
Absolutely. Hello, everybody. It's a pleasure being here. Thank you, first and foremost, for having me over. Sorry, I had a little bit of allergy, but as Wayne was saying, we had the opportunity to spend Easter lunch together with my family and my kids. It was a blessing. And we were talking about how society has changed as we have from when we're little children compared to our kids today. Economy has changed, society has changed, the way people think has changed. And I was sharing with Wayne that we grew up in a Christian family. We were poor and broke, but we were happy. We lived together in a one-bedroom apartment, 4 children, mom and dad. And my dad was the breadwinner. He was a mechanic. And one day, somebody from church mentioned to him an opportunity in the United States. He went to the embassy. He got his visa, and he flew away. He connected with a local church, and started working as a mechanic. And he decided to work hard in order to provide for the family. 1 month, he extended the visa, became 6 months, 6 months, 1 year, 1 year, 2 years. And he left, I was 8 years of age. But when I saw him next, this was 10 years later, I was in the Colombian Army. I was a lieutenant. We were looking for Pablo Escobar back then. And I saw my dad. And I was so grateful to see him again. And he said, son, this hard work and faith paid off. You're moving to the United States with your family.
Oh, wow.
So we moved. And I always believe in God. I put God first and foremost in most things I do in my life. And I said to God, that, and God allowed me the opportunity to join the Army. and I met this Hispanic recruiter. I didn't speak English. Let me tell you, I didn't speak nothing, zero. So I went, you know, I met him. He was from Puerto Rico, and he told me, listen, Eddie, you seem to be good with numbers. You seem to be very logical. Answer the mathematics. 2 + 2 = 4. And everything else, pussy. If you don't know, pussy.
Right.
And by the grace of God, by the skin of my teeth, I passed that exam. So my dream was to always go to Germany. So I told him, listen, I want to go to Germany. That was one of my goals in life. He told me, okay, this is what you need to do. And he shows me this video, these Rambo-looking guys coming out of the swamp, shooting things and blowing things up. My eyes got this big. And I said, yes, I want that. That is what I meant to do that. And I signed up. Went to Germany, put myself to school, learned English, learned German. Years down the road, I figured, you know what? I could do much more. I can become an officer. And I applied for it. And God opened that door. And I became an officer, went to Iraq 2 times, once to Kuwait. And while in war, every single time we went out, we prayed.
Wow.
And believe it or not, none of my soldiers died in 3 deployments. Wow. It wasn't me, it was God.
For sure.
But it also took hard work. It took sweat, tears, determination, dedication, pain, but the rewards were greater.
Let me ask you a question. I'm going to go back to Colombia because you were in the Colombian Army.
Yes, sir.
For how long? How long were you in the Colombian Army?
I was mandatory 1 year.
And how much did they pay you?
No, they didn't pay people, right?
There was no salary. They didn't pay us.
That's what I mean.
It was only like a $2 or $3 for buying toiletries, but there was not a salary for you to buy toiletries. Mm. Yeah.
That's why the military in the U.S. looked pretty good, right?
As soon as I found out that I sold it, by then, to me, it was a lot of money compared to making $5 a month.
Yeah.
They're telling me that I'm going to make over $1,000. I couldn't wrap my head around that. I was like, oh, my God, it's amazing. Feed me.
Tell us some more about your journey in the Army and coming through the ranks. Because there's just some great things about leadership and some of the people that mentored you and the things that you accomplished.
I tell you, I will never forget my first drill sergeant. I think I shared that piece with you at the lunch that day. I told him, listen, drill sergeant. I spoke to him in Spanish. I pinpointed somebody that was with a Hispanic last name. I said, oh, my God, my opportunity to get help. Drill Sergeant Rodriguez. Drill sergeant, I have a small problem. I really don't understand anything they're saying. So I'm going to need some help. And he looked at me. He goes, like, Vargas, I like that. You're asking for help. Tell you what. I'm going to help you. Effective today, you are in charge. And everything you mess up, everybody pays. And I looked at him and I said, how can that be helping me? He told me, trust me, it'll help you. So I couldn't say, oh my God, I'm in trouble now. And then he got to all the guys around him at platoon and he tells him, he is in charge. Everything he messes up, you pay. So help him. Teach him, bring him up to speed. That was my very first experience with a good leader. He pushes you.
Fantastic.
He pushes you. Then I saw another drill sergeant, and he had a rifle in his chest with some airborne wings. And I looked at him and I asked him, "Drill Sergeant, how did you get these things right here?" He told me, "Vargas, only the best.
Oof.
You want one? Only the best. How bad do you want it?" And let me show you something. Let me show you something in my office. There is that rifle.
Oh, wow.
And there are those wings.
Wow.
I would never forget that answer. Only the best. Go for it. How bad do you want it?
Oh, wow.
Talking about motivation right there. How bad do you want it? And I started realizing that although I had a disadvantage, the language, I had the desire and I had the brains like everybody else. So it took discipline. And my leadership saw that and they promoted me really quickly to sergeant, to staff sergeant. And I got recommended by a few generals to become an officer. I commanded 3 units as a captain. And as a senior captain, I think I told you the story with General Anderson, didn't I, Wayne?
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember this incident that took place back in 2011 with Major Nadal Hussein.
When he
went crazy in Fort Hood.
El Paso, yeah, Fort Hood, yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
At the time, I was selected to become Major General Anderson's aide. I was selected to be his aide.
Wow.
It was a humbling process because they picked, out of so many captains in one brigade, they picked one. And you're like kind of competing for the position. They look at your performance. They look at your education. They look at your command capabilities. They look at your deployment experience. And they selected 4 guys for the job. And 4 of us were in there. And finally, we interview and everything else. And they came out and said, "Thank you very much. All 3 of you go home. Captain Vargas, you're staying. You were selected." And I asked, "Why? These guys are excellent officers. They're probably better than me." And the answer was, "Well, you got the highest fitness score." We were all equally the same, but in fitness, I beat them all.
There you go.
And that's what he was looking for. So anyhow, we were in four at the time we were in Wisconsin when that incident took place. Major Nadal Hussein. And I remember the general. General Anderson said, "I don't know how you're going to do it. They figure it out. Get me back." And we call the airport, the airline. And we called it with several airlines. But anyhow, one airline held the flight for 2 hours for the general and myself to get back to Fort Hood. And everybody was applauding, you know, because they knew what was happening in Fort Hood. There was a plan that the general was going back. And we went to visit every single wounded soldier. We saw firsthand the damage of what happened, but he was there present with every single wounded soldier. And we met every single one of the family members of those that we lost.
Gosh.
That's a very humbling experience. You can see those levels of leadership. I mean, at that level, at the general level, he didn't care. He went and visited every single one of them. That was very humbling to see this man doing this.
Man.
Sorry, he's a little bit emotional at that, but.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
My gosh.
Whew. Anyhow, so leadership. When you talk about leadership, leadership is the desire to influence others to accomplish a mission, although they don't see it, but you have got to lead by example. And you have done that many times, Wayne. I've seen you speaking, and you are very encouraging. You are amazing. And you already walked those roads. It's very impressive. Great example of a leadership. Great leader.
Yep. Well, why did you leave then? Because you were on your way. I mean, You would be a general now, wouldn't you?
I probably would be a full-blood colonel by now. Yeah. The reason why I retired is because at the time, my wife, Christina, she was also a captain. She was deployed to Afghanistan. And at the time, my son Carlos, he was a year old. My daughter Angelina was 3.
Yeah.
I was behind in the military as an officer. And it was stressful, I tell you. Going back from Dallas to Fort Hood to Dallas with 2 newborns or 2 babies, it's tough. You learn how to appreciate your wife or your woman really quickly. You know, you got to become mom and dad, change diapers, all these things that you never, as a man, foresee yourself doing for an whole year by yourself, cooking, changing diapers, doing laundry, shopping, doctors, all these things that go on behind the scenes that sometimes we don't recognize.
Yep.
Trust me, I learned how to appreciate that very much. But she was due, she was about to come back. I think she was about 45 days. She had 45 days before returning back to the United States. The Army reached out to me and they tapped to move me to a unit deploying to Afghanistan, and I was going to have to send my children away to Miami. Mm. And I didn't want to have my kids away for that period of time. Well, there would have been a gap, a month and a half. So I opted out for the retirement because I had that time, that window. I had already fulfilled the requirements to retire. But I was set up for success to get promoted because my position with the general, he had assured me, stay in and you're going to make it. But there are priorities in life, and at that moment, that priority became my children, my family. So, and I don't regret it. It was the best choice ever.
but now then, I mean, isn't this fascinating, Bruce?
It is. Now, are you now in the sales industry now yourself?
I am in a sales industry. I began as a salesperson working in the automobile industry.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's another testimony within itself.
I'm sure.
I wanted to be a federal agent or a state trooper, and I ended up selling cars.
Oh, wow.
Never sold a bottle of water in my life. Never. And God opened that door for me. And I remember the day before the interview, this voice woke me up in the middle of the night. And the voice said to me, we were sleeping. It was like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And the voice said, be still and know that I am God. That's what the voice said to me. It woke me up. I promise you, like you and I were talking, that voice woke me up. So I woke up and said, hey, did you hear that? She was like, no. And I told her, she said, I just go to sleep. You'll be fine. Went to sleep. Next morning, went to the interview. And I was so disappointed that I just didn't feel like I was going to get the job. So I was driving home. I was just like, now what, God? Now what am I supposed to do? So I'm driving right by the house. I saw a big dealership that said, Vandergrift Honda, now hiring. I pulled in the dealership because something told me, pull in there. I pulled in there, and I told him, hey, I'm trying to apply for a job, and just wanted to see what is available. What's your name? Eddie Vargas. Hold on a second, sir. She looked at this list, and she goes like, oh, yeah, your appointment is in 10 minutes. She said, appointment? What appointment? She said, oh, yeah, a few months ago, you sent resumes everywhere, and we sent your reply back. It is today. Appointment. You got an appointment in 10 minutes.
Wow.
So I was like, what? I didn't even know that. Sure enough, I interviewed with the guy that was doing the recruiting, and he was a retired Special Forces soldier.
Oh,
and he was a trainer, also for the car business. And we connected. And that was the beginning of a great career for me. Sold tons of cars, helped a lot of people, started doing advertisements on the radio for Honda, in the Berkshire Hathaway company for the year of sales. I finished number 7 in the entire organization in the country. My first year of sales. So they moved me to finance, and I became a finance manager. Then they moved me to be a sales manager, internet director, pre-owned manager, and I done all these jobs, but it got I got promoted like that because, first of all, God opened the door. That's first of all. Second, dedication. You just work hard. Work hard. And work will pay off. Do your best. And now I enjoy doing finance. I came back to finance. That's what I do now. I'm a finance manager for Chevrolet.
I'll tell you what, the secret that I've always heard from you is that it's two words, work hard. And I don't, I'm going to tell you something, Bruce. I don't know, personally, I don't think I know anybody that works and puts the hours in that this guy puts in. When he said he's finance man, he's more than that. And he is with good old Clay Cooley.
Yes.
Chevrolet, he's and they are, you know how big he is. And he's the man, this guy right here. And listen, he's in the office sometimes at 10:30 at night getting paperwork done for the, you know, but then all the sales come through and he fixes them up and makes sure it runs and gets everything in order. I mean, this is not sometimes, this is on a regular basis.
Oh yeah.
He just works. And that's a secret that we always tell people in my business when we're coaching is you just have to work hard. And I'm sure, Eddie, that you coach people in the dealership.
Absolutely.
A lot of guys don't want to put those hours in, but then a lot of guys don't have that opportunity to make the money because they're not putting the hours in.
Yep.
Look at that.
Oh my goodness. Look at that.
Clay Cooley, ladies and gentlemen.
Right there. There it is.
Come see Clay.
There he is. Now that you talk about that, Wayne, I'm going to show you this. I'm going to show you this report. There's an internal report for the entire company. This report right here shows all the finance managers in the organization.
Holy look at how God. Many people.
Wow. All the, look at that. And they are ranked from number one to bottom. This is number one guy. Okay. That's me.
Oh,
but it's because, as Wayne was saying, you got to work hard. You simply work hard and do your best. And then pray about it, and everything will take, God will take care of the rest. But you got to do your part.
Yep.
You have got to do your
part. Yeah, that old saying, God helps those who help themselves, is a lot of truth. And we eat by the sweat of our brow.
That's what the Bible says.
That's exactly right. And, man, I'm telling you, that's a fact, Jack. Well, I'll tell you, this is Bruce, You got any questions? The guy just amazes me.
I did as part of your deal. I mean, really, I know you got the airborne. That was that? Did you have to go to Fort Bragg? Did you go to jump school in Benning? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of specialty things you did that some of that stuff you can share, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, although I'm airborne and I have a combat action badge and I got the German proficiency, I got an award from the German Army. This is the highest award they offer. It's gold. I earned that award with the German Army, so I get to wear that too as well. But
good.
I am most proud of that rifle. I will never forget what that sergeant told me. Only the best.
Okay.
Yeah. And to earn that, it's called Expert Infantry Badge, EIB. That's the acronym of it. The Expert Infantry Badge is 1 week of testing, day and night, of different skill sets that particular combat soldier needs to know. It begins with lobbing grenades.
There you go.
Then it goes into qualifying expert with your weapon. Not marksmanship, not basic mark. No, you got to be expert. It means with passing your fitness test. But it's not just passing the fitness test. You got to max your fitness test. You got to be above everybody else. Then you gotta do 12 miles road march. You gotta do land navigation at night in a mountaintop somewhere, finding some points in the middle of the forest at night with no lights. And you better trust your pace count and you better trust your compass.
Right.
You might end up somewhere where you're not even supposed to be. Then you gotta do the same during the day. You gotta be able to call artillery. You gotta be able to do first aid. You gotta be able to do hand-to-hand combat. You gotta be able to do read a map. You gotta be able to do all, it's a number of stations that you gotta do. Operate a machine gun, operate a grenade launcher, to set up a claymore mine, all these things that you got to do. And you can only make two mistakes in a week, or else you're eliminated.
Wow.
Very, very tough. And I tell you, a lot of people, close to 700 of us started, and I want to say 67 of us finished.
Wow.
So that's very, to me, that's very, very, I'm very proud of that. The Nervon School, I mean, you got to be able to be prepared when that door opens and you're looking at, what the heck am I doing here? Am I insane or what? But
I can imagine, again, though, that even if you miss, if you're in the field in real life action and you miss even two of those things, you could be responsible for the death of everybody. So
and you miss only one of them, it can cause the life of everybody.
Yeah, only one of them. So, man, congratulations. That is, what a feat. Holy cow. Yeah.
And another thing that I think that I would tell people is, yes, hard work and everything, but also we gotta remember people. Those relationships that we form with people, connecting with people, mm-hmm. will make you a better person. Understanding people, being able to help others. If you are able to help others, trust me, others will be able to help you in return.
Right.
You have got to be willing to help people.
That's right.
That's how that works.
So do you, I know you're the, so you're the sales manager. Do you help train? Do you train sales staff as well?
I'm a finance manager and I used to be a sales manager, but here,
sorry.
Every single dealership has training room. And right now we're in a hiring campaign. So they are being hired by the guy that hired me. It's interesting how that works. He's here hiring people right now. And once they finish that process, we are going to train him. And I've done that on many occasions. We go out there and I'm just going to show them the way. You got to show them what is it that you need to do in order to be successful. Somebody's got to show you.
You
got to be able to follow.
Do you have to do some cross training, like, even though somebody's in service or somebody's in parts or somebody's in sales, but do you guys have to still train? Do you still have to train them a little bit about what the finance area is doing?
Absolutely. Like, for instance, that's interesting. That's a very good question. This is a service ticket for somebody. Somebody just needed a service ticket done and they had to pay a very large service bill. I don't know if you can see that.
Yes. Yes, I see.
$7,900 ticket. We train with them. We tell them, okay, when you have customers like that, we'll be able to help them out. We'll be able to do other things versus sticking the bill to the customer. So we work together. Now, some salespeople decide that maybe sales is not for them, and then we send them over to work with service or parts. So we do that. We do that.
That's good. All right. Yes.
What you do is amazing. First of all, Eddie, and I have to digress. Thank you very, very much for your service to America. You know, and the real kicker there is, you know, when in America they talk about immigration, it's such a big topic right now.
It is.
And you see all these people, you know, flooding across the southern border. Right. And there's such an uproar and words of illegal aliens and all this. But when things are done properly, you know, it's people like you that make America great. I mean, we're a country of immigrants.
We are.
Coming from Columbia, four children, two adults in a one bedroom apartment, dad is the breadwinner. And I also grew up, but I thought we were, I mean, I didn't think we were poor, but today I look back and I think we were poor, but no, compared to you, we weren't. But to come to America and say, you pay money for being in the Army? Give me I'm ready. And then to take the opportunities along the way and to work your butt off to get where you are today. And listen, you know, you're a great dad, you're a great husband, you're a great person in business, you're a good Christian man, and I want our listeners to understand you're a Christian man. It's just God's proud of people. That's what our country's about. And I tell you what, I salute you. So
thank you, sir.
And thank you for your service to the
U.S.
Man,
and thank you for being obedient to that voice that told you to pull in.
Yeah.
Tom Vandegrift's shop or whatever, get that first job that he had already sowed the seed, you know, and you unknowingly had that that interview that day. That's definitely a spiritual, that's a God thing there, man, that to think that you'd already mailed it out, forgot about it, and that's where you needed to be. So I thought that's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah,
it is. It is.
Certainly amazing.
You know, it's so interesting you say, for being obedient and listening to that voice, because that's what it takes. We got to also listen to his voice.
Oh, yeah.
We got to be obedient.
We just had a series on learning to listen in our church. And, yep, that's very interesting. Very, very interesting. Well, Eddie, I can't thank you enough. Listen, I'm going to tell you something, Bruce. We'll let you go, Eddie, because I know that this is where you interrupted your nap time. Because this guy will work till 11 o'clock tonight, and he doesn't have any time. But he found this time for us.
Okay.
But I know that, Eddie, I just want to tell you again, thank you. Bruce, do you have any last words you'd like to have with Eddie?
Oh, I mean, he only had 30 minutes with us. Was that the drill?
Oh, he can stay.
Stay as long as you want me to stay. Right now, I have nobody.
Of course, I got more. I always have more questions. I want to get Wayne's out. But so, Root, did I'm just, since you kind of brought it up, did how many more years did your wife serve? Is she now retired? How did that story end a little bit?
She began in the Iowa National Guard, and we met together in officer basic course in Ordnance Branch in Aberdeen. She was an ordnance officer.
Okay.
She also began as an enlisted soldier. She had to put the sweat and tears and go through college, and they got her commission. And we made a basic course, and we started dating. Then she changed into the Army Reserves. And when I deployed to Iraq, that was my second deployment, and I came back. She flew in 2004 to be with me in Germany. She moved in with me, and we were together in Europe, in Germany together. And she continued the military in the Army Reserves. She deployed to Afghanistan.
Oops.
Long story short, she did 20 years, and she went to Afghanistan. Yes, she retired. She retired.
That's wonderful, man. That's always, that's good that she was able to do that, you know?
Yeah.
And do you guys have USAA, or does your job get you back?
We have USAA. Yes, we have USAA. We love it.
Yes. That's good. That's good. Well, that's really good that you made those sacrifices. You know, you talk about the no more machismo, man. You're not, you know, you're changing diapers and doing all that stuff. So that's really glad that that you were a full service dad and did all that good stuff when the kids were little, man. I've been in the same shoes, man, where, you know, having to found myself performing a lot of different caregiving functions. So good stuff. Good to hear. So what do you think's next for you? What's the next chapter for you in your, I know you're at the job now, so you don't want to necessarily go too forward with that, but where do you see your progression here with your career?
Well, I think my goal, I don't foresee me ever retiring from working. I will always have something to do, but my plan is to continue in the industry for about 6 or 7 more years to continue in the industry. And after I finish that, I probably find something along the lines of helping or coaching people or contributing to the community. But my plan is to stay for about 7 more years in this industry. 7 more years.
That's good. Yeah. I didn't know because, for instance, when I worked for the Justice Department, they forced you out at 57. You were out of there, you know. And so I didn't know if there, you know, there's these kind of breaking lines and whatever else. So then you can be, basically, you said you're going to be like Wayne here in 7 years.
Yes, I want to be like Wayne just like that. I want to, he's a great leader, I tell you. I admire Wayne. He's just an amazing person.
I'll send you a check in the mail, Eddie.
Yeah, no,
that's the beautiful thing, you know. I mean, as a former career guy and retired, you know, and this and that, and now, you know, still working
for a second one. Yes, going for the second one.
60s and as a private boutique consultant, you might say, and so it's fun because then, you know, you get to work as much as you want to work, or you can work as little as you want to work. You don't.
Yes, sir.
You want to come in? My days start at about noon or one. Now sometimes they go late, but you know, I'm committed to enjoying coffee in the morning and watching birds for a minute and this and that, and doing email and the admin. I'm the chief and bottle washer. My assistant is Mr. Hewlett Packard over here, and Miss Dell is in the brief. Yeah. Working management position, but anyway, so yeah, no, I think that's great. Yeah, you know, I look at, you know, I see folks that are still in the throes of a company job, and you know, they're still I get a lot of vicarious pleasure out of seeing that. You know what I mean? Even though I know it comes with its own challenges and demand, right. You got staff issues and staff problems and this and that, and demands from management and all, you know, of course I'm, you know, sensitive to that. So, and so anyway, and plus I come, my father, I think Wayne came from car dealer type of business. My dad was in very closely acquainted to the car dealer business. And, one of my sons is, so to speak, pretty acquainted with the car dealer business. So anyway, that's why I was asking, yeah, my heart goes out to you, man. It's a fun industry, a very productive industry, but it's pretty demanding too, as well.
Very demanding, sure. Certainly very demanding, but it's fun. It's a lot of fun too, as well.
Yeah.
Well, my father had 2,600 people under him, and he never got a complaint.
Wow!
Oh wow!
What he did is he mowed the cemetery.
I never had a complaint either.
None of them complained.
I never had a complaint. And I don't know if it's because this might have something to do with it.
That might have had something to do with it. You can pull the pin any minute.
If you want to be number one, that would be the last complaint.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
So far, no complaint takers.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a lot of fun, but in interviews that I've done, I've interviewed people that have said, you know, I have all this experience, I need to start at the top. Or you hear people today that they're unemployed, and there's everybody's got to help one and sign out for something right now.
Right.
And they tell you, I'm waiting for a management position. Well, yeah. My point is, I always say that, you know, in our business, everyone starts at the bottom.
Yes.
There's only one profession that I know where you start at the top, and that's a grave digger, and then you work your way down. But, I mean, everybody starts at the bottom if they're going to learn, because you have to learn the basics.
Absolutely.
You know, to be a good finance manager, you've got to know what that salesman does to make the sale. Plus, you've got to understand that salesperson, and he has to understand you so he can do the paperwork.
Absolutely.
Correctly give to you so that you can complete the paperwork.
Correct.
So it's all a team effort. So
it is.
It's just, Eddie, again, I get flabbergasted. I'm glad that you came on today. Thanks for all your time.
Thank you for having me over, guys. I appreciate you very much.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it means a lot. And, you know, it's good to see your appreciation, right? Your appreciation for work, your appreciation for this country, amen, right? And that's, I want to underscore that, man. I mean, there's a lot of people that are America. They live in America and they hate America. And I can't understand that, you know.
It blows my mind.
And so, you know, here you are, you know, gosh, you weren't even from this country. Well, kind of, anyway, you were, you know, and then wanting to join the military,
right,
serving two, you know, your country now here, you got to serve two countries, man. And I got to go back because you said you were part of the, what, Fuerzas Armadas or whatever, looking for Escobar, Pablo, right?
El Ejército Colombiano, Colombian Army. Yeah, yeah. We were, you know, in Colombia, I finished high school. I was about 17 when I finished, and I left right away. And back in 86, 87, that's when these things with Pablo Escobar were flaring up in Colombia. And we certainly were out there in the streets, patrolling the streets. You're talking about a 17-year-old kid. That
I was in Medellin or where were you?
Bogota. Yeah, Bogota. But he had his routes to Bogota, and he flew to Medellin or left to Medellin, and right, he went all over the country to his business or whatever. But anyhow, that rifle was probably bigger than me. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a skinny, young, 17-year-old kid that,
sure,
didn't know what the heck was going on, but I was willing to serve, and I was drafted to, and I did what I had to do, and I actually became a lieutenant in the Colombian Army as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. No, I've been on the show. Long story short, I'm a ham operator, and I was telling Wayne I have the same radio that was used by the Colombian soldiers that located Escobar.
Uh-huh.
They were in the radio communication van, right, patrolling around this neighborhood. And it's a Kenwood TS-140S for those of you radio fanatics.
Wow.
I have that radio. As a matter of fact, it's in the trunk of my car, Wayne. I brought it here to inspire some people. But anyway.
That's awesome.
Was it the radio that caught Escobar, but it was the operator and the way to triangulate the signals. But anyway. Man, I mean, what a great, you know, what a great pedigree for you to come from Colombia to here, and now, you know, serve your countries, plural. And do you ever go back to Colombia? Do you have extended family there?
I do, but I haven't been back in several years. I still have my cousins, uncles, you know, relatives, but I haven't seen them in several years. But eventually, I'd love to go back, take the family over there, take the children.
So yeah, they get to see their roots.
They get to see their roots. They also get to appreciate the great country that we live in.
Yeah. No. It is
a way to show people that we live in an amazing country.
No,
a beautiful country.
Absolutely, but you know, and I hope, hopefully, I'm sure, but you know, your kids speak Spanish. It's good to have both heritages, I was excited as a kid. I grew up and my last name is Cameron, and they had the Cameron plaid, and boy, you know, we had the bagpipes and all this and that. And then I took that genetic test, that the ABC 123 or whatever it is, and it came back I wasn't Scottish.
What is it?
Well, yeah, I'm British, but I mean, it's like 98% British, you know, and I'm like, holy smokes, like this has been the biggest conspiracy lie that's. I was going to take the kids to the castle in Edinburgh. I mean, I had found the Cameron Castle and everything, Wayne, and I actually wanted a refund from my genetic test, and they were wrong, and they were smoking crack in the lab, and this is Bruce Scott and Cameron over here. And anyway, long story short, I don't have that benefit of even enjoying. I'm not going over to see Big Ben and taking the kids, but man, I get a lot of pleasure. taking your kids.
It's worth the money just to hear the story.
I know.
Yeah.
No, it was a pain in the ass spitting in a cup for days. I mean, you know what I mean? One of the first rounds. Maybe they did it with a very little bit of saliva now, but good God, man. I don't know why I did it. I'm glad I did it. Anyway, it is. Still a child of God, right? Doesn't matter.
Yes. All right. So, awesome.
Anyway, man. Well, good stuff, man. I'm so glad that you came on the show, and you and Wayne.
Thank you so much for having me over. It was a pleasure.
You and Wayne are friends, and it's always good to bring on some great positive energy and And as we kind of keep going, we just got to make the next right decision, right?
Yes, sir.
I asked, what are you going to do 5 years from now? And it's like, whew, the older you get, you might be thinking, I don't know, man, I'm still alive. But yeah, just make that next right decision and let God take care of everything else,
Amen. Yes, sir. Absolutely. Well, gentlemen, I just wanted to say thank you so much for having me over the show. It's great, Wayne. Thank you so much for the invitation. Thank you so much, sir, for having me over here today. You guys both are amazing. Consists to emphasize that, Wayne, you're a tremendous leader. You're an inspiration to many people worldwide. Your name is well-renowned throughout the world. So thank you so much.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks again.
Thank you so much. But I got to get going right now, so thank you so much.
I'll go ahead. Oh yeah. Well, thank you, and then we'll see you next time another time.
Bye.
Thanks.
Okay, folks. Well, boy, that was a great show. I appreciate Eddie coming on the show, Wayne, and just good to hear his story. And folks, man, I mean, the position he has is a very esteemed position, a finance manager here in Texas of a Chevrolet dealership. That's big chip stuff.
One of the largest ones in town.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm about ready to head over there, trade in this Cadillac. Okay. Maybe not. man. I'm going to get coming up on 200,000 miles on this XT.
They're good for it.
But it's paid for. I'm too cheap to give it up. But, well, great, man. Thanks for bringing him on the show. And such a good time there. Well, folks, we're going to have a guest next week, Wayne. We have a famous author coming on board with us and going to talk about some of his work. But he does coaching and public speaking. He's an author. He's a high energetic fellow. And great. We wait to see. His name is Dr. Alan Leica. Dr. Alan Leica will be with us. And they sent us another email. His agent or whatever sent us an email, so we're locked in for that. All righty, well, thanks for coming by and seeing our show, folks. Of course, we're on I'm at conscierscoach.net, but the show is on Apple Podcast, and it's there for you to enjoy. It's also on iHeartMedia, and also our shows are archived on the LA Talk Radio site. And so we have, our Facebook page is Concierge Coaches Show. Instagram page is Concierge_coaches. And Wayne, how can folks reach you?
Wayne_515@yahoo.com.
There it is, folks. All righty then. Well, everybody, thanks for coming by and having a little visit with us. Come by next week and hear our exciting guest. And have a blessed week. Take care, everybody. Until next time, we'll see you later on the concert. Bye-bye. See ya.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.